Hi, I'm Al Criazzo from Catskill Mountain Housing. You're listening to WGXC, Agra, Catskill, and Hudson.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. And add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to wgxc.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kyle of Athens, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Good evening. This is Race Talks for August 15th, 2023. And I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host on WGXC 90.7 FM of the wavefarm.org enterprise. Here, every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. is where we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. Why talk about race, you may ask? My answer is simply to combat racism. Education is key and discussion a must. It is my hope that you, too, will come to know there's only one race, the human one, and many ethnicities. The bottom line is here you'll find us keeping it real on Race Talks, where no topic is taboo. We are in for a treat today. Our guest hails from an African country of Nigeria. And because we have so many Nigerian guests on, or Nigerian-born guests on, I thought to create an entire segment for next month addressing questions that people might have about that grand continent of Africa. There's actually a poem about it from County Cullen that I played before. So we won't play it on this episode, but it's a really wonderful poem by County Cullen. And one of the main themes is, what is Africa? And it mentions Africa, a book one thumbs listlessly till slumber comes, and that many things are unremembered because we as Americans who have relatives from that great continent, we're not really certain what nationalities or what ethnicities we are. So there are many things that we can go and do to find out more about who we are if we have African ancestry. And to be quite frank, I believe if you're looking into science and you're believing what science says as far as we come out of one groups of people, the birthplace of humanity is in Africa itself. So we would all have some DNA coming out of Africa. So I'd like to put that out because our guest is the esteemed professor. She's not on right now, but she, oh, I think I do see that she has logged on. Yay! So I can make it. So I was just ad-libbing there for a little bit. I know she's definitely on. And many of these things that we're going to do today that I'll mention, and then I'll talk a little bit about who our guest is. It's because of her, of course. She's a very larger-than-life figure, like I said, hailing out of the African nation of Nigeria. And there's tons to talk about But we will stay within our main topic, which is talking about microaggressions. So that is a talk topic. And our theme is breaking down discrimination. So we're going to break down not just the word discrimination, but the actual acts of discriminatory behavior, and how if you break it down and make it very small, then you can combat that, those discriminatory acts more easily. So you have to know what it is that you're going to overcome before you obviously can overcome it. So we're going to talk about that too. So may I have a brief drum roll for our guest, Dr. Chinyere Agbana-Magruder, who's a professor of health, law, and policy and management. And that's not all she does. That's like her day job, but she has several other things that is that she's very passionate about that she will share with us. May I ask you, Dr. Agbana-Magruder, to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Okay. Hi, all. It is a pleasure to be here. And interesting story. I thought the meeting was supposed to start by 6 o'clock Central Time. It was a good thing I checked in prior, just after getting out of my swimming pool. I thought I was going to have a leisurely swim, chill out, take a long shower, come out, and be fabulously ready for the talk. But anyway, good thing I messaged Miss Tim and prior to that. So my name is Dr. Chinyere Agbana-Magruder. I am a professor of health policy, public management, political science, and criminal justice at Austin Peay State University. I've been there for 20 years. I actually got my 20-year faculty award yesterday at the university. And
I just wanted to say congratulations for that. And I think a birthday is in order too.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. So I got my faculty award yesterday as well, as the fact that yesterday, the 14th of August, was my birthday. And prior to that, I worked as the bioterrorism epidemiologist for the state of Tennessee. I was the first woman, the youngest, and the first African-American epidemiologist the state of Tennessee had prior to my taking the position. And prior to that, I worked at Western Kentucky University. And before that, I worked in melanoma research at Vanderbilt. And I went to school in Nigeria, Africa. I majored in parasitology and entomology and distance with vectors and arbovirus division, which is affiliated with World Health Organization. And then I got married to an American and I came to America and I've been living here since then. So that is the short and long about me. And then I have 3 sons who are now adults and they've all graduated from university.
Well, that's a lot to unpack, but we can start with the term microaggression. So I'm going to first share the actual definition of microaggression. And what should I call you on air? What would you prefer me to call you?
You might call me Dr. C. I mean, that's what students call me at the university because my name is very difficult to say. And so they just say Dr. C or Doc. So that's fine.
Okay, Dr. C.
I prefer to say Chinyere. You may go ahead, but
I love Chinyere. I think that's the most beautiful name. So I will say Chinyere or Dr. C.
Chinyere.
Chinyere. Am I not saying it correctly? Chinyere?
No. Chinyere.
Oh, one more time.
Chinyere.
Go ahead.
Chinyere.
Chinyere. Okay, Dr. C. All right. Well, you mentioned attending and working at many different institutions. We actually connected at one of them that you mentioned, Western Kentucky University. And when you mentioned going to so many different academic and locations. What you take with you is your personality and your ability to do your job, of course. And what people seem to want to know more or want more of you is your relationship with them. How do you connect with those who may never have met a person from Africa, may never have obviously visited Africa? And then, of course, Nigeria is just one country in the grand continent of Africa. So the knowledge that many people, even in academia, that you may face may not be as knowledgeable. How do you deal with those interactions?
Well, I mean, I try to be as educational as possible. It is very interesting. When I first came to America, people described me, like when I was at Vanderbilt, they're like the researcher from Africa, or at my university, my current university, there would be like Dr. Magruder, she's from Africa. And so one of the things I try to tell folks, especially my students at the university, I try to make it a teaching moment. I try to let them know that Africa is a continent. And so if you are trying to reference where I'm originally from, you may say, ooh la la, she's from Nigeria, which is a Nigeria is a country in West Africa, to be specific. And so I do get a lot of questions like that. I do get questions like, ooh la la, you must have learned how to dress after coming to America. Because I do like fashion. That is one of my things. So for me, I try to make it a teaching moment. The issue is when it becomes repeated after the teaching moment, then that can be considered a microaggression, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, let me explain to the listeners a little bit about the term microaggression. This actually comes from Harvard Business Review online, the diversity and inclusion section. There are many facts about microaggressions as it pertains to people. It could be within any industry. Clearly, it could be in academia and is, but it can also be in finance. And, you know, and if you have a position in any walk of life, it can be in fast food, right? So what are microaggressions? They're usually aimed at marginalized groups. So groups that normally don't have a foothold or are seen as a majority in an area, in an industry, in a job, in a profession. And sometimes the person actually stating or making the microaggressive statement or using terminology that can be hurtful, they may not think that they are doing something like that that's so hurtful. There's an example that they use with a Black woman being told that she isn't like other Black people they know. I know when I was growing up in high school, maybe even before then in grade school, I was told by friends at school that I wasn't like all the others. And I remember thinking, because I'm young, all the others like who? Like my friend that I play hide and go seek with, you know, after school. I mean, my sister who, you know, I grew up with, and, you know, we may not look like exactly alike with complexion wise. She's a little lighter than me, but we're certainly both Black. And I believe that, you know, I am like the people in my neighborhood. So I didn't really know how to feel about that, but I know I didn't feel good about it. But now you increase your age, you increase your knowledge about the world and social norms, and you recognize that that's not exactly right. But I didn't know of a term for that. So I like the idea that we can call those types of verbal statements microaggressions, and that even the people that may be speaking those microaggressions can acknowledge that it's not the best way of, you know, conversing with someone or sharing that type of thought processes with someone else. Can you share any of these types of microaggressions and how, and on Race Talks, we like to keep it real, but we also want to keep it positive. So kind of sharing how you may have overcome them to give the listeners an understanding that we're human, right? We, you know, I'm considered African-American in the sense that my culture, forefathers most likely came out of Africa, possibly Nigeria, most likely someplace on the West Coast. That's what the history says, that the enslaved populations in the United States had come mainly from, or actually left Africa from the West Coast, although they may not have originated from Africa, being brought to the outside of the land, to the coast from inner tribal homes. So what would be a way of overcoming, or that you have overcome, these microaggressions?
I mean, like you said, microaggression comes in different forms. And part of microaggression is how the recipient feels about it. And you mentioned being told that you're not like other, you're not like other African-American women. I've had that. I've been told that, you know, both at my university. And usually, you know, as a professor, I do have a lot of interaction with students. And like I mentioned earlier, because of that, I try to make it an educational thing. Of course, when it comes from other faculty, then that is more eye-opening. I remember when I first started at my university, one instance of microaggression that I'll remember is I wore an African outfit, Ankara, you know, to lectures one day. And the following day, I came to work and I saw that somebody had put a note under my door and said, "You are in America, dress like an American." And so it was very, it was very insidious. I could not make it a positive learning experience because I did not know who he was. You know, I just walked into my office and somebody has slid a note under the door. And, you know, I bent down to pick it up and I saw that and I was like, wow. And I knew because, you know, the day prior I had won something, quote unquote, African. And so that was, you know, that was interesting. And I mean, there wasn't really anything I could do about that. I mean, there was no way to put a positive spin on it because I could not tell which of the people I interacted with put the note there. I presumably thought it was probably from one of the other faculty members that put the note there. So, I mean, you know, that gave me pause and I had moments when I would think about it and try to imagine the professor or the person that it was that left the notes. Because, I mean, you know, when I walk to my lectures, you know, you say hi to people and then you go on. I mean, nobody said anything to my face. Another instance is where...
Can I ask you before you go into another instance, and I definitely want you to do that, can I ask you about that? Because you said it wouldn't be a learning experience, but were you able to mention that in your classroom?
It wouldn't be a learning experience for the person. Usually for the person that instituted that act of microaggression, because usually what I try to do is I try to incorporate such acts of microaggressions into a learning experience. Like you mentioned earlier, sometimes individuals that engage in it don't know that it can be hurtful or it can give the recipient pause or something. You know, sometimes I choose to believe for the most part, you know, that it's coming from ignorance or an unknown place. Okay. And so when something is coming from ignorance, as an educator, you teach the person such that they'll know better. So in this instance, because if someone, any of those people I met the day I was wearing the outfit, has said anything to me, you know, I would have told them, ooh la la, this is what we wear for formal occasions. You know, teachers, you know, in Nigeria can dress like this to teach, and that is considered, you know, appropriate office attire. But of course, I didn't have the opportunity because it was a note under my door. I couldn't tell who left it. And like I said, it gave me pause a few days because I'll go down the hallways and I'll be thinking, you know, who was it out of all those people that I talked to that left that? I don't think I mentioned that to my students. I think I internalized that one. I internalized that. And, you know, it gave me pause for a few weeks because I will pass by my hallway and I'll be thinking about who it was. But one thing is this, when I got my award yesterday, I decided to wear my Nigerian traditional attire, albeit, you know, an Americanized iteration. So I had black pants, you know, with the wrap and the shoulder throw, and of course my scarf. So I wore it to receive my award. So when I was called for 20 years at Austin Peay and I walked up the stage to get my award, I had that. And the comments were positive. You know, when we went for lunch after the awards, the comments were positive. People were like, ooh la la, I like your outfit. And I mean, there are so many things tied to the idea of traditional outfit. I remember one time I had my traditional outfit and one of the professors said to me, Dr. C, I like your costume.
Ooh, costume. So that's kind of like a microaggression. Depending on how close this person is to you, I don't know.
I had to, you know, talk to him and, you know, explain to him that it's my traditional outfit. That is not a costume. A costume is something that you wear for like Halloween, something that, you know, that you're putting on. You know, this is my traditional outfit. It's not a costume. And actually, to be fair, he was like, okay, I'm sorry, Dr. Magruder. I understand. So, and that's why I say it's important to make it a teaching experience. In this instance, he was trying to be complimentary. He said, I like your costume. And right. I was like, well, thank you.
Boys, avoid kind of share, you know, coming from with it. Well, my question though, too, it seems to me that a person who would put a note under your door, recognizing, like this professor, that it was negative, that they knew that they were, you know, doing something that was aggressively wrong, that they may on the flip side see you and then try to give you a compliment. Not saying that this particular person is that, but it's very hard to find who these people are because they don't show their true colors. They don't show themselves.
Yes.
So as you were talking, I was looking at, because the theme is breaking down discrimination. And one way to break it down, if you don't know the person, you know, don't know the actor, is to address it in a more general way, because the actor is there, right? They're listening because they want to share their point of view. And if not own it, they definitely want to share it. And so they'll be there to see how you've responded, right? So showcase yourself as, you know, part of your culture, your heritage, and proudly doing it on an occasion. That person may very well have been there to witness that. And so I think you did a great job by, you know, not letting it bother you, not letting it, you know, this this statement derail the your personality and who you are.
And like I said, I did wear it for my award yesterday. So if he was one of the faculty there, he saw it. And like I mentioned, all of them were, the ones that came up to me were positive. They said they liked it, you know, they liked the look. None of them said dress American to me. And so if he was there, you know, or he or she, I keep saying he, if he or she was there, you know, I hope they appreciated the fact that I was wearing my traditional outfit. Yeah, but it did bother me for a while. Yeah.
I want to look at the word discrimination a little bit, the word itself, because there are two ways of looking at this word too. It can be seen as a pejorative, which is how I'm using it tonight. Discrimination is in a negative sense, breaking down negative behaviors that alienate people and divide people. But there's also that discriminant ameliorative or positive definition of being a discriminating person, right? Where you're thoughtful about something and you're very specifically engaged in something. So that's not the discrimination I'm talking about. I'm talking about the ones that seek to divide and make less than a group or a person of, in this case, different identity and ethnicity. You mentioned being from Nigeria and coming here because you got married or after marriage, but you were already in, you know, you were already an adult into your profession, but you hadn't yet had your family, correct?
Yes, I got married right after I completed my specialist degree in parasitology and entomology. So I completed it sometime, I think early, late summer, and then I got married and I was in America by December.
Now, when you do go back to your home country, and do you feel like there's any discriminatory behaviors there, being that you, for now, I'm not certain of your age. You don't have to be very descriptive, but it sounds to me that you have at least as many years in the United States as you have had in your country of birth.
Actually, more years in the United States. I've been here for over two decades. Yeah.
I'm letting you say that. Okay, great. So is there any discrimination in your home country? Because, I don't know, do you sound differently? I mean, maybe can you share a little bit about your ethnicity, your tribe, your way of growing up in Africa to share with those of us who've never been to Africa and could learn a little bit more about it from you?
So I am Igbo. And so if you look at the map of Nigeria, where the Igbos are around the southeast of Nigeria, my traditional language is Igbo. Igbo is my primary language. And of course, English is my secondary language. And then I picked up French as a tertiary language. But since I've been in America, I barely have the opportunity to speak Igbo. So now I tend to read and write in English more comfortably than I can write in Igbo. So when I'm speaking to my parents or to people from Nigeria, I will go back to speaking Igbo. Though now they say I speak sort of combined Igbo English. So you mix Igbo words with English. So when the last time I visited Nigeria with my two youngest sons, that was in 2018. And I don't think they say that my accent has changed. That they could understand me. They said the accent was different, okay? Because they will ask me, did I grow up in Nigeria or did I grow up in America? Okay, and I'll go, yeah, I grew up in Nigeria. But I guess because I've been in America so long, there is a little bit of an inflection in my accent. And interestingly, my American students tell me I have a deep African, British, and French accent. So so they do understand me, but my two sons, with the horse that they have problems understanding. And so I remember my middle son, he just graduated from Harvard with his PhD in astrophysics. So he was explaining the computer to my uncle. My uncle is elderly at the village. And so he was trying to explain to my uncle. And so he finished explaining to my uncle, and my uncle was staring at him. And then finally, my uncle turned to me and said, "What did Chima say?" And then Chima turned to me and said, "Is your uncle deaf? I mean, doesn't he?" Because I mean, it was a little thing. I mean, that was supposed to be talking. And my son was explaining this thing, "Oh, you sign in and do whatever, whatever." And he said to my uncle, "Do you understand what I'm saying? Can you go ahead and do it?" And my uncle was just staring at him. And so finally, my uncle turned to me, and then my son turned to me. And so apparently, my uncle did not understand a word of what my son was saying. And my son thought my uncle didn't hear anything he was saying to him. So he said to me, is there something wrong with his hearing or something like that? And so it was a teaching moment for my children, because sometimes in America, when I'm trying to talk to the person that mows my lawn and I'm trying to explain to them what I want done and they don't understand me, sometimes if any of my sons are home, I'll say, "Please, can you come and explain to this guy what I want him to do for me?" Because when I get excited, I think my accent becomes pronounced. And so my children sometimes will be like, "Mom, you can explain to him," you know. And so for them, it was a learning experience, because now they're in another country and they had a little bit of problem communicating. And so they could see that. But all the people I spoke to in Nigeria when I went back, they could understand me, albeit they will have the question, "Ulala, did you grow up in America? Or did you grow up in Nigeria?" But they could still understand me, even with my Americanized African accent, so to speak.
Well, now let me ask you, I mean, maybe my listeners are hearing and understanding a little bit better than I am. Since you don't have your video on, I can't actually see you. So I'm understanding that your uncle is from Nigeria.
Yes, he grew up, lived in Nigeria all his life.
Right. And so your son, although he's obviously been around his grandparents who are in the States too, he's not able to speak Igbo or have
that, that was my mistake. My ex-husband is American, and we had a nanny that was from the islands when my kids were growing up. And so she, you know, the nanny spoke English, but it was sort of like patois or something like that. And my ex-husband spoke English, and I decided that I wasn't going to speak Igbo to my sons, because the pediatrician said that if I spoke Igbo to him, he will pick it up, but it would take him a little bit longer to speak, because he was being exposed to three different languages. I should have continued with Igbo, because my brother is married, his wife is half Czech, half Nigerian, and they spoke Russian, Czech, English, and a little bit of Igbo to the kids. And so the kids can speak all those languages. The nanny was from Nigeria. So I did not speak Igbo to my kids. And so with regards to my two youngest sons, they had never been to Nigeria. That was the first time they went to Nigeria. So yeah, they had never
well,
been.
Well, I know we have another segment to do, but I'm going to ask you this question, and then we're going to prepare for a segment. First, I want to make sure you will do the segment with us. We call it, it's a Q&A type of segment. It's supposed to be fun, so we should have a lot of fun here. But it's called Race Talks Jeopardy.
Okay.
Being that you are an real Nigerian from Nigeria, many of these questions should be easy for you. Normally, Normally, we would have two people on, and so we try to make them easy and difficult for both types of people. So some of these questions should be very easy for you, and some maybe not so easy. We'll see. And ideally, the object is for everyone to gain some more information about the culture that you are part of, right? You said you're Igbo. Also, there's another ethnic group, another large ethnic group in Nigeria, Yoruba, right?
Yes.
And
there's Yoruba, there's Hausa.
Okay.
There is Yoruba, there is Hausa, there is Igbo, and there is Fulani. Those are the major ones.
Oh, yeah. Fulani is one of the ones that I remember growing up people talking about. Okay, so that was Nigerian too.
Yeah.
All right. So the question that I have, though, is when people think of immigrants, and we had last month, we talked about, you know, immigrants coming to this country, and the poem on the Statue of Liberty is basically asking for the tired, the, you know, unwanted group. Mm-hmm. But you don't fit in that category. You actually didn't leave Nigeria because you wanted a better life, in a sense. You were already living a pretty darn good life in Nigeria, right?
Yes.
Let me ask you the question. You could take some time to think. I know my students are going to get ready for the game, so I want to give them a little bit of time. But so I'm going to give you, you know, let you answer the question. But I want to know, because when we think of African Americans in general, or immigrants in general, we're looking at the society, the financial situation that's not as grand. We have people who are living day to day, working day to day. Some are impoverished. Some are middle class, or, you know, but we don't really think of the wealthy. And when we think of people with money, we see that there might be athletes, you know, or movie stars. We don't really see the educated class in general in the United States having money. You know, it's not one of those professions one would go into to become wealthy, for example. You might want to be a lawyer or a doctor. Although you are a doctor of letters, one would say, you know, that's not as lucrative as being a doctor of, you know, medicine. And with your titles, you kind of straddle both groups. But what I guess I'm saying is you have African-American fairly young Black boys in America. Do you also feel a little bit nervous with them being here in the States, as opposed to living in a country where everyone has their, for the most part, skin color and tone?
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, especially after the George Floyd murder, that brings to bear the issues of race connotations in America. One of the things, I mean, looking back at it, one of the things that I should have done, I should have taken my sons back for a summer and provided them the opportunity to take summer classes back in Nigeria. And I think, you know, that would have done two things. He would have exposed them to the culture and the language, and hopefully they would have picked up the language. Because when we went in 2018, my son, you know, liked it so much that he wanted to try and learn Igbo, but Igbo can be very difficult. It's very tonal. He was actually taking Igbo classes at Harvard. And then he was like, "Mom, this is very difficult because it is very tonal." Thinking about it, yeah, I should have had them take, you know, a summer abroad at home. And that would have, like I was saying, that would have given them the opportunity to learn the language. And that would have also given them an appreciation for the educational inclinations in Igbo land specifically. So going back to your question, you were asking me whether I...
Do you feel a little bit unnerved with your sons being African-American in America versus, you know, them being who they are when they are in Nigeria? What is the dilemma?
That's the thing. They don't know the language in Nigeria. And so when they go back to Nigeria, they have to stay there a while for them to be able to speak in a manner that will be easy for, like, especially in the people in the village to understand. Now, city people, city folks can understand them, I would assume, fairly well, because English is the lingua franca in Nigeria. But when you go to the village, and to be fair, I don't speak the Adamani, Igbo, okay, which is the Igbo that my grandparents speak. I mean, when they're speaking that, I don't understand them. So when we are looking at the uneasiness, I mean, I've thought about the possibility of, you know, them staying, you know, going to Nigeria, staying a while. Because, yeah, I do have concerns about America. You know, like every parent, you know, you talk to your sons about, ulala, if you get stuck, be respectful, you know, be polite, be nice. If it's at night, turn on the light and all that. So those are some of the, you know, concerns that weigh on, I think, practically almost all African-American families.
Regardless of their economic...
Regardless of their economic, socioeconomic strata, you still, you know, there's a part of you that still think about that, okay? I mean, of course, you know, I talk to my kids and, you know, you try. Like when they were young, I said, okay, if you drink, I don't care where you are, you know, take an Uber, you know, right from the time they got into college, I'll be like, if you drink, take an Uber, don't ever drive, you don't want to be stopped. I talked to them about the legal ramifications of, you know, drinking and driving, or if the police were to stop them, you know, why, after having had a drink or something like that. So it's something that you think about, and, you know, we discuss it. I discuss it with my sons, especially with my middle sons. And despite the fact that, you know, my oldest has graduated from university, he used to be an analyst for Google, and now he is a senior analyst for a Swedish company, and he lives in Manhattan. And the middle one graduated with his doctorate from Harvard, and the youngest graduated from university, and he's an analyst for a Fortune 500 company. You know, you still have that conversation with them, and, you know, you still have that knowledge that this is America. And so, yeah.
Is that our time for Q&A? I'm not sure what that noise is coming from. By the way, I should let everyone know that I have my two assistants on, Joey and Margaret Ann. And we have been trying to figure out how to introduce this Race Talks Family Feud. So maybe that's what they're trying to do. But we don't want to cut you off. So please finish.
That's fine. So is the Family Feud a game we're supposed to play now?
I guess so. I don't know if that was the sound. Is that the game show sound? I just kept hearing you beat.
That's the style. Okay. Just tell me the parameters, because I don't know.
I'll let you know. But is that the sound's over? That was the sound itself. The ding ding.
Oh, it was supposed to be going.
Oh no. Okay. I guess that's just the ding ding. I think we're having audio
technical
problem. Technical difficulty. Okay, well, maybe we can use that by going out of the game show. Okay, so the ding dings, here we go. So what we have is questions, and I'm going to ask you the question, and you will answer the question with, have you ever watched Jeopardy? Where I give you an What do I do? Give you an answer. Give me the question.
Well, I mean, I don't usually watch Jeopardy. I don't usually watch TV.
Right. So I think what this is one of the team put together questions. So I don't even know the answers, but here we go. I mean, the answers are listed. So I'm not going in knowing the answers. I'm going to ask you the question, and then you can provide an answer. And it could be, a rough guess, whatever you want to do. But
that's fine.
Okay, so this has to do with countries in Africa. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many there are?
Do I know how many countries in Africa?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I know that one because I think I was looking at something on Gemstones and they were talking about the fact that over 50% of the world's gemstones and rare materials come from the countries in Africa, and there are 54 of them. Yeah. So
very wealthy Africa is as a continent, yes. And many nations have more wealth than, Europe. So, but how many countries are there? I mean, I don't know how many countries there are.
54.
Like 40 or something.
That 54.
Oh, very close. I mean, it might actually be right. We have 53. So ding, ding, ding. I call that a winner.
Well, I mean, there are 54 sovereign. I mean, like some people would say 53 because to Somaliland and, the Western Sahara. So, yeah. I mean, sometimes some people will say 53, some people will say 54. As someone that teaches policy, I would say 54, but most people
I think it's a winner. Ding, ding, ding. Okay, so who's keeping score? Raise your hand. Who's keeping score?
I don't know. Who's keeping.
I see. Joey's keeping score. Okay, so we have one for you. All right, here's another question. And again, many people, we know how many states there are. Well, most people know how many states there are in the United States. So these are questions that, you may or may not know. Wait, 50 states in the U.S., right? 48 none that are contiguous. All right. I think that's the answer for that. Okay. What is the most widely spoken language in Africa? And I'll give you a hint. It's not Igbo. I thought I'd give you a hint, right?
Yeah, I mean, Igbo is very, I think it's Swahili because that's what you hear, at least that's what I hear when I go across Africa. So I would say Swahili and Yoruba. Swahili is the most widely and then probably followed by Yoruba. Because the Yorubas are both in Nigeria and other parts of Africa. Swahili, you hear that. I go to Kenya for safari, I hear that. You go to South Africa, you go to Easter. I mean, so I would say Swahili.
I like that answer. In fact, that answer makes a lot of sense to me. However, I think you're going to go, when I say Arabic.
Oh, okay.
And many people also speak Arabic because I know that Northern Africans, right, have the Arabic as their major language in many of the countries.
Well, I mean, in Northern Africa, Arabic is, but in Africa, I would say Swahili, but anyway.
Maybe in West Africa, Swahili. In Northern Africa, Arabic. I think also because maybe people's religion they're going by. Okay, now this is a question that I think could be in any land, but we'll see. Animal. Animal question. Do you have any pets?
Yeah, I have a dog.
Okay, well, it's much bigger than that one. What is the biggest land mammal in Africa? You mentioned how wealthy Africa is as a continent with natural resources. Animals are natural resources.
So the biggest...
The biggest mammal. Land. The biggest mammal on land, because there's difference.
The biggest land mammal will be the elephant.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay, so we're going good, but we have to probably end on an. When are we ending? How much time do we have? I think we have time for at least two more questions.
Okay, go ahead.
This is a difficult one for you, being that, you know, you haven't been living in Nigeria for a while. Okay. What is the largest city in Nigeria?
The largest city in Nigeria?
Yes.
I would say, I shouldn't say the capital of Nigeria, because, but Lagos used to be the capital. So I would say Lagos. Abuja is now the capital. So Lagos is the largest, the most expensive. So I would go with Lagos.
Ding, ding, ding. But I like what you said about that just changed its capital, because a lot of people, when they come to the United States from Europe, from Africa, from everywhere, they think mm-hmm. of New York City as being mm-hmm. the capital of mm-hmm. New York. Mm-hmm. But it's not. Albany is the capital of New York, right? And the yeah. same is true for California. The biggest city that most people are familiar with, Los Angeles, mm-hmm. that's not the capital. Mm-hmm. And so in the States, most of the larger cities and many of the states are not the capital. So mm-hmm. I think that's what they did. They take the capital out of the largest city so that, you know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, Lagos used to be the capital till they made it Abuja, but still Lagos is you know, the largest and the most populated. So, but it used to be Lagos, you know, the capital was, Abuja was made the capital, you know, recently after I had left Nigeria.
Now, I would hope this isn't true anymore, but because we both were working at Western Kentucky University,
okay,
I don't know if you recall there being students from Rwanda, and they did a presentation of Africa for an African-American student group. And mm-hmm. I was sitting in the student group population area, and one of the students went, "Where are the huts?" And yeah. I was just thrown back, because every place obviously has grown and become more modern. But some people still have it in their head that most of Africa, mm-hmm. where people live and thrive, is mm-hmm. still back in the, I don't know, what, 1800s? So when you say modern city Lagos, it's mm-hmm. truly modern, correct?
Yes, it's very, very modern, you know. And I mean, like, if you see the pictures, like sometimes I will have pictures that will show my students, and they'll be like, "Where is that?" I say, "That's Nigeria." And they're like, "That's Nigeria." I mean, people have various misconceptions about Nigeria. People have asked me where I learned how to dress. I mean, I guess the assumption is that I, you know, I ran around naked in Africa before coming to America.
Yeah, talk about microaggression. People will be like, you know, with, you know, certain things in your hair and your nose. Although I want to say that we are going to have on our show for September, or at least slated for a show in September, so I don't want to get people's hopes up and then not be able to have a guest. But we're going to continue with the African flavor and bring in people who have visited, and I want to make sure I say the name of the country correctly, but I'm not sure. Help me if you know it. Tanzania?
Tanzania.
It's more Eastern, is it?
Yeah.
In Africa? Yeah. So we've been, I think you might be my third Nigerian born, or maybe not Nigerian born, my third Nigerian member on my show. One was Nigerian. In fact, her mother and father are both Nigerian, but she was born in the United States, so she's like more Nigerian American. But okay, last question.
So you have somebody from Tanzania here?
Not yet. We're going to, because you know, we've been having a lot of people from the west mm-hmm. coast of Africa, like Nigerians.
Tanzania is from East Africa, so Nigeria is West Africa. Okay.
Now, I also don't know how to pronounce this, so I'm going to help you pronounce it. If you can get it correct, and this is the last answer, last question. So it might be that you've already won, but let's see. What is the official currency? Nigeria.
I didn't hear you. Can you repeat the question?
The official currency of Nigeria.
Oh, geez. The official currency is the Naira.
That's how you pronounce it, the Naira. Okay, yeah. Naira.
I mean, the Naira has been the currency ever since I can remember, and it hasn't changed. So, I mean, you know, that's not a difficult one.
Okay, I can tell you one, but we can't say who won. We have to have the...
Of course I won.
Well, we have to have the mediator here. Joey?
He won.
Of course.
Now, I'm going to tell you what you're winning. I'm going to tell you what you win. What do you give a woman who has everything? The opportunity to put all of her information on my website. So I'm going to share with everyone, because we're coming down to the last few minutes of the show, and I think we normally will have something, some audio to go out, but we didn't start the show in a regular way because I didn't know if you were going to show up or not, but yeah, you did. Yeah. And I had a blast here. Yeah. I want you to share with the audience, the listeners, how to get in touch with Professor Agbano Magruder, or I know you also have another, I don't know, people call it a side hustle, but I don't think you're hustling with the things that you sell. You want to share any of that information with the listeners?
Well, I mean, you know, I collect a lot of items over the years, you know, focus, jewelry, a lot of diamonds, semi-precious gemstones from Africa, willow opals, diamonds, sapphires. And so I do have a jeweler here that will custom make them into necklaces, bracelets, and earrings. So I have them on my online stores. And, you know, the jeweler will make them, and I'll store them there at the vault or my bank, and I have them listed. And so the name of my online stores are called Chistix Couture and Collections. And so you're going to find fabulously amazing furs and unique gemstone and flamboyant gemstones. And they're all genuine and earth mine. And, mostly from Africa. And so I also have YouTube channels. And, you know, if you look at Fashionista Professor or Dr. Chistic Fashion Show, you'll find me on YouTube. And on Instagram, on fashionista.professor, because, of course, I love fashion. So if you want to check out my online stores, go to Chistic Couture and Collections. I have different online stores.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're dealing with only 2 minutes. So I want to thank you for being on my show, Dr. C. I'm going to end with just calling you Chi-Chi, since you said, you know, just stick.
Yeah, Chi-Chi. Yeah, everybody calls me Chi-Chi. Yeah, because they can't say Chinyere, but that's okay.
Yeah, obviously I can't say it, but I'm going to pronounce it all. I'm going to try it really all night. I want to be able to do it. But I want to thank you for being on the show, and I want to extend the offer for you to be on the show when I do another special segment with Nigerian queens, and being one of them. And I know that you had since we don't have an audio going out, I want to wish you a happy birthday
Thank you.
In effect, after your birthday, but also I want the listeners to hear what you got for yourself for your birthday. I thought it was very interesting.
Well, I got for myself, I love to shop, I love fabulous presents. So I decided to get a totally remodeled, perfect 1926 Ford T. And so I had the owner of the company and his men actually drive it into my grand living room. So it is in one of my living rooms, okay? And so when people come here, they're like, ooh la la, is this for real? I say,
but we can also see a photo of that on one of your YouTube channels, correct?
Yes. Yeah.